Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. I just sometimes have to tell you how I feel. I mean, it just don't even make any sense. You know, this is what I do. I'm not down here baking cookies or ironing clothes.
Although I bet if you did, they'd be
well, they'd be good. But I'm just keeping it real. Now, we are going to have the next guest on in just a minute. But, Councilman, I just want to wrap with you just finishing up what the goal of what you and the rest of the council members hope to do. And even though the mayor's put out this kind of I'm on the fence statement, we just lost him. Actually, you want to come in here and get this thing. It just went down. Let me just read the mayor's statement right quick while we are X, you want to come in here and get this? It just went down. And we just have to bake cake while y'all are listening. It just went down. You want to take this too? See, y'all can't see. You don't need to see everything. Some stuff is none of your business. Now, I wanted to mention this email while X is getting wrapping up him and getting Tim on. Mayor Cooper at about 4:20. His office issued a statement that said all Nashvillians deserve to be safe, including those who are making their voices heard in public spaces. I'm grateful to our public safety officers for their professionalism and facilitating peaceful demonstrations while avoiding both physical confrontation and injuries. Demonstrations that have seen historic participation levels. He goes on further to say we will continue to hold our law enforcement leadership to our community's highest standards for public safety while engaging in a 360-degree evaluation of policing and public safety policies and practices. And lastly, Mayor Cooper says in his statement, as previously announced, we will achieve greater accountability and transparency through a use of force review and the full deployment of body-worn cameras while continuing to engage with our community partners and members of Nashville's black community. So that's what he says. So we'll see as the world turns. Now that's the statement, Councilman. Go ahead and get Tim. Yeah, that's the Councilman Freddie. That's the statement. So, what's your reaction?
My reaction is we've been here before, Sharon. Mm-hmm. This takes rolling up your sleeves and deep investment, personal investment in the conversation, so that you understand it, right? I mean, this means this statement would be much better if it said, I am going to demand of Chief Anderson that we do these specific things, mm-hmm. right? And we've got reform packages out there that are very clear. And it's not just body cameras or, mm-hmm. you know, a couple things on the use of force policies, right? Mm-hmm. This is a new era of transparency.
Exactly.
That runs all the way into training. And this is also, we're going to be out there together, the chief and I as partners, and we're going to be out in every community. I mean, this is signing the two of us up for a year-long immersion in figuring out how we build trust in communities, particularly in Nashville's communities of color that mm-hmm. are not feeling access to the public safety we know that others have been enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And, you know, these. I mean, that's what I said. There's so too much milk toastiness going on around here because you know, the governor, he does milk toast and he does well. And, you know, we need something definitive because that stuff is what's been going on. Is Tim on there? That's what's been going on for a long time and we can't get anything accomplished. So, Councilman, I want to thank you. And, you know, I'll be back in touch with you in the coming weeks to get a follow-up on it, okay?
We will talk again soon, Sharon. Thanks so much for sharing the 411.
Of course. That's Councilman Freddie O'Connell, this district over here. He's one of the 14 law enforcement, Metro Council members that signed a petition to say it's time for the leadership to change at the Metro Police Department. Now, let me welcome in on the broadcast, dear brother Timothy Hughes. He's Regional Director for Black Votes Matter and a board member of the Community Oversight Board. And, Tim, thank you so much. Are you moving around?
Yeah, I am still now. Thank you so much, Sharon Kay. It's such an honor to be on with you today.
Oh, definitely. Now, as if you got a chance to hear any of this prior to, and that's why I was apologizing for being a couple of minutes late, getting you in, but you know, I fired myself up, so I had to say what was on my mind.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, that's, you know, and just as you do in your own eloquent way. Now, you have so many advocacy roles here in Nashville, and in particular, all of them to me are right now intersecting in such a way that you are the perfect person to have here, because you're involved at the epicenter of so many of the community-based advocacy groups and organizations. You have the latest member of the Community Oversight Board, and the ongoing back and forth about the cameras. Let me get some thoughts from you, if I could, on this doling out of these body cameras in Nashville.
Yes, Sharon. And so that I appreciate you setting the stage just a little bit for me. I'm going to give just a bit of context to make sure that the listeners are following along and that we're on the same page. Just give a little bit of history about how we got to this moment. And so you mentioned the Community Oversight Board, Metro National Community Oversight, a board on which I am very proud and grateful to have the opportunity to serve. That board itself was created out of our own George Floyd moment here in Nashville, Tennessee, back in 2018, in the aftermath of the police murders of Jacquees Clemens and Daniel Hambrick. I want to make sure that I raise their names in this moment because they, along with many other individuals who lost their lives at the hands of rogue police officers, is part of the reason why we have the creation of a community oversight board in the first place.
Absolutely.
And so that board serves as an opportunity for members of the community to have their voices heard at the table when deciding the rules, regulations, accountability, transparency, and expectations of the MMPD here in Nashville. And so, as you mentioned, we are at a particular moment in our history, not only as a city and a state, but in our country and in our world, as we are seeing uprisings all over the world in the aftermath of the police murder of George Floyd. But we are looking now at our own city, at our own priorities, at the ways in which we have the ability to influence how policy is set in the city of Nashville. And so we're in a unique moment now where we see these uprisings happening all over the world. And so we are at a critical stage where we can begin to talk in an informed manner about the ways in which we are investing in the policing of our communities and whether or not the ways in which we are investing are actually keeping us safe. And so the councilman, along with 13 of his other colleagues on the council, are now raising the question that maybe what we need is a change in strategy, a change in policy, a change even in leadership, because we are now looking at a situation and a circumstance where we, in order to find a way forward, we may in fact need new leadership to help us organize and direct ourselves in a capacity that can really imbue trust in the community. So what we're looking at right now is with something called the Nashville People's Budget Coalition, on which groups that I currently organize with, like Gideon's Army and the Equity Alliance and others, are working in concert to see and feel the pulse of the city of Nashville. And just recently, there was a release that said 5,000 Nashvillians weighed in on what they would see as their priorities in the community budgeting process. And what the people have said overwhelmingly is that it is now time for us to direct resources away from the MMPD and police department and towards some of these other support services that will actually have an impact on reducing the feeders for crime into Nashville. Things like poverty, things like lack of access to opportunity, things like quality education, fully funding MMPS and our public school systems, those kinds of measures that would reduce the need for so much investment in policing.
And knowing that that is the case, the buck always stops with the leadership. But if I can remember just very clearly, for years before 2018, the community was asking for body cameras, and they have been asking for them for the law enforcement in this city for quite some time. And
absolutely.
And that is why so many people are sick and tired of hearing these constant stream of excuses. Well, we got five with them this year, and then next year we got 17 to have them, and then the next year, I mean, this is the longest process I have ever seen in my life. It's as if there's some serious foot dragging that's going on, and the question is why?
Sharon, I think that you really have hit upon the crux of the matter in this moment. And so in the midst of these uprisings around the police murder of George Floyd, what we have seen now, it seems, from the mayor's office is at least an agreement or consideration that now would be a reasonable time to at least begin the process of rolling out body cameras, a process that you mentioned took nearly 1,050 some odd days to begin. And so there are many people within the community who care about the issue of public safety who have been asking for a long time. Why is it taking so long for us to get around to something that we already know is something that will help to make sure we're not only protecting citizens and members of the community who are affected by policing, but also the officers themselves? We need an independent arbiter who can say what happens in an interaction between a citizen or a civilian in Nashville and the officers who are assigned to protect and serve them, so that we can make sure not only that we are finding out misconduct or other issues that might be of concern to members of the community, but so that we can imbue a sense of trust both from community members and officers, and make sure that we have individuals who can show through evidence exactly what transpired. And so it is something that we have been very, very concerned about as members of the Community Oversight Board, and also as just community members in general, because we believe that this is very, very significant and important, and we're very, very pleased to see that at the very least the mayor's office is now open to the rollout of body cameras throughout the entire precinct.
Well, and the church said amen, and we're glad that you joined us, Mayor. But I'm here to tell you, as somebody who has been on the air in Nashville for 30-something years, it was over 10 years ago that the community started asking about these things, because we were seeing, as the body count stacked up all over the nation, the community has been asking over and over and over and over, and it's been had been a constant stonewalling. And I have, and so that's why for in 2020, for only 76 more, I'm like, you mean to tell me everybody don't have one yet? It just defies logic. So anyway, we're going to take a timeout, and I'm going to try to figure out what that noise is. because, you know, I have on headphones and it's going straight into my head. We're going to come back with Timothy Hughes. He is the regional director for Black Votes Matter and a board member of the Community Oversight Board. We are discussing the issues of the day right here as they are mounting in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking the time, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Traffic's busy out here on the South Loop, the West Loop. There's a crash at Hamilton Church Road at Hamilton Crossings. That has some injuries. The fire department's on the scene. Still working that wreck South Nashville, 300 block of Cedarmont Drive. Still working that one, 5th and Woodland Street, East Nashville, that tied up traffic about 15, 20 minutes ago. This traffic report brought to you by Cosby Creek Cabins near Gatlinburg. Online at CosbyCreekCabins.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
WFSK recently turned 47 years old and didn't get a chance to celebrate like we normally do with our annual spring fun drive for Birthday Bucks. Those tax-deductible donations make all the difference in the world for the operation of WFSK 24/7 with the best in smooth and contemporary jazz. Please wish a happy belated birthday to Jazzy 88 WFSK, Nashville's jazz station, by making your donations right now online at WFSKFM.org. That's WFSKFM.org. Or by mail. Checks payable to WFSK, 1000 17th Avenue North, Nashville 37208. We're Jazzy 88, serving Nashville since 1973. We're Jazzy 88 WFSK. We're Nashville. Bill's Jazz Station.
Donors choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
Did you know that every year, public school teachers spend nearly $500 of their own money for student supplies? Let's do the math. That comes out to over $1.2 billion a year. And that's just not right. At Donors Choose, we want students and teachers to have the tools they need for a great education. And now, more than ever, they need your help. Here's what you can do. Go to DonorsChoose.org and choose from teachers' requests that support reading, math, science, history, and more. Once a request is funded, we'll take care of shipping everything directly to the teacher. It's that easy. You'll receive thank you letters and photos from students and teachers and a report of how every dollar was spent. Teachers' needs have never been greater. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.
Donors choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Oh, Tim, hold on. We on the air. Hold on. we were talking, you know. We want to make sure that the quality is there. Because, you know, quality is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, quality. He was just saying they had some storms over that way.
Gotcha. And it's interfering with the
city. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I can dig it. It just sounded like, you know, something was brushing across the thing. And, nothing, you know, and I have my headphones on. So it's going straight up in my head. Anyway, Timothy Hughes, is with us, and I'm happy that I could get his time because, you know, right now activists are busy, y'all, and straight up. And he is regional director of Black Votes Matter and a board member of the Community Oversight Board, as well as so many other community organizations and advocacy that you do. And I think that I want to commend the Community Oversight Board because y'all know how hard that vote was to get done. We had to vote that board in. You know that. It wasn't a magic thing and people wanted to fight it and they didn't want us to have it. Remember that, y'all? We had to go to the polls and we had to show them what we were working with. That's how come we have a Community Oversight Board. But one of the things, Tim, that has kind of disturbed me about it is knowing that some of these organizations here, politically correct ones, didn't want the Community Oversight Board in the first place. And they in addition to that, and one of them was, you know, I kind of feel, because I know Chief well. I've interviewed him dozens of times. Know him. And know him very well. And I did not see him giving a lot of love to the thought of having this. It seemed to, every time somebody would question something or say something about the PD, it would just be personal, so personal that I think it handicapped him from doing his job. And he couldn't separate this thing in order to do the right thing. Does that make sense?
I think that you make a very valid point, and you raise something that I think is critically important in two ways, and I'll respond to them both. Number one, I really appreciate you giving a little bit of history to the audience about how it is that we got here in terms of the creation of the board, but the fact that it took the people's action, mm-hmm. Because there initially the proposal was made to have the Community Oversight Board created as a part of something that the Metro Council would create. And unfortunately, it didn't move in that process. It didn't move in that capacity. And so it required steps being taken by members of the community to collect the signatures on the petitions and to make sure that it became an initiative that would be on the ballot mm-hmm. and to vote it into existence. And so that took some collective effort
yep.
on behalf of members of the community and organizations and groups working together in concert to make this a possibility. And so that's an important lesson that informs how it is going to be necessary for us to move forward as a community to make sure that we not only stand up the board and hold the board members accountable, but also make sure that we have a community that is safe and equitable for all Tennesseans and all Nashvillians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to require us to stay vigilant. It's going to require us to make sure that we are paying attention to the budget process,
yeah.
that we are participating in the 2020 census to make sure that we're allocating the funds that are necessary to go to the different projects and programs that make it possible for us to have a safe and equitable community
mm-hmm.
here in Nashville. But also, it's going to be critically important for everyone under the sound of my voice who's listening to make sure that you are registered to vote in preparation for the August election that is coming up on August the 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Early voting will begin in July the 17th. There have been some changes as it relates to the COVID-19 crisis that
yes.
are very important for people to understand.
Yes.
We, as a state, it has recently been decided that the state of Tennessee will allow individuals who request a ballot by mail to receive it no matter the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're concerned about the prospect of being exposed to COVID-19 in this moment, or if you have other obligations or responsibilities that keep you from being able to physically
mm-hmm.
go to the polls, you now have an option as Nashvillians, as people in the state of Tennessee, to request an absentee ballot
yeah.
be mailed to your home, and for you to submit that ballot in the same way that you would submit it if you were at a physical polling place. So we are now eliminating all excuses that would keep individuals away
yes.
from the polling place in this moment. So we need to make sure that everybody who is eligible is registered to vote and that you request that absentee ballot or you show up on August the 6th to make sure that your voice is heard.
Well, and I certainly pray we don't have an epic failure like Georgia did, because that was a disgrace.
Yes.
In addition to that, I think the people of Georgia who stayed out there, some of them till midnight and storms and wind and rain, were determined. And, you know, I just can't help but be fortified thinking about those folks. They were not going to let, ain't nobody going to turn me around. That's how they look to me, as the modern day version of the old 60s civil rights song that the activists used to sing. I ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. And that's how they looked. And I was, that was very reminiscent to me, the strength that they showed. And we hope that that is not what happens here. And we don't have that type of suppressive mode kick in Tennessee, because we've already had enough hurdles here. Lord knows the stuff has
Lord
been.
Knows,
he knows. He knows. He knows. He sees. You know, that we just have had, people just can't take this. They are sick to death of the way folks treat one another. And that,
yes,
that means that it's, this is not just business as usual. So, Tim, how, as an advocate, you know, I know you all do encouraging things to help a community, you know, move forward and keep a focus and all of that. Tell us about what some of your organizations you're involved in are going to be doing in the coming months to keep the focus right where it needs to be.
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate you for allowing me the opportunity to talk a little bit about what our coalition work is doing. And so there are a few different things that I encourage members of the listening audience to learn more about. One in particular has to do a little bit with what we were describing earlier as it relates to investment in the community. I encourage those folks who have not yet taken a look at the Nashville People's Budget Coalition findings. I would encourage you to reach out and take a look at the Nashville People's Budget. Take a look at the work that has been done by members of the community, both as grassroots organizations and individuals who care about where it is that we put our resources. We're trying to put our money where our mouth is in terms of the advocacy and activism in the community. Yes, people should be out in the streets demanding justice for George Floyd and for all people who have suffered at the hands of police violence. But we can't just stop at the activism and the organizing in the streets. We've got to make sure that people take that energy and do something concrete and specific with it. And I encourage folks to get involved in the process of budgeting. Understand how it is that we divvy up and divide the resources that you give to the city of Nashville. These are your tax dollars that are going to be disseminated in a particular way. And we want to make sure that the people's voice is respected in this moment. And so I encourage those who are listening to take a look at the Nashville People's Budget. We are also very unique in the city of Nashville in that we are recovering from a number of different challenges in this moment. Yes, we're facing the situation with COVID-19, and there are hundreds of thousands of Tennesseans who have been affected either by the direct, the virus itself, and have been impacted in terms of their health. And that is certainly something that is being felt within communities of color, African-American communities in particular. But we are also being ancillary beneficiaries in some ways of the jobs crisis that has been created as a result of COVID-19. We're also struggling with a number of different challenges that are persisting in a variety of different ways. And so it's important for us to recover not only from the crisis of COVID-19 and the crisis of jobs, but also from the recent spate of tornadoes that has decimated some of the infrastructure in many areas of our city. And so we need to make sure that we're investing our dollars and our resources in a reasonable and responsible way. And we can't do that without the voices of all Nashvillians being heard. And so I encourage you to check out the People's Budget. Check out what's going on with the 2020 census, because that is going to determine what happens with the resources, the tax dollars that are coming from the federal government into our communities. So if you want to be invested in public education, if you want to be invested in public safety, if you want to be investing in public infrastructure that's going to keep our roads and our bridges and bring back the buildings that have been damaged and the homes that have been damaged in the national community, then it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we are participating in the census. And so I'm going to review. We're going to follow up on the Nashville People's Budget. We're going to follow up on the census. But I also encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, if you are paying attention, you've got to recognize that this is 2020 and we have elections in this year, both local elections in August, on August the 6th, and also federal elections for the presidency and other things that are happening in November, on November 3rd. So I want to make sure that you're aware of those things that are happening in our community. be out in the streets protesting. Make sure that you're making your voices heard in that way, but make sure that you're availing yourself of the opportunity to influence the variety of ways in which we need to make our voices heard in this moment.
Amen. Now, let me ask your thought on this, because this came down a few minutes ago that is in the same vein, but just slightly different question or comment. I think it's rather significant that NASCAR is going to ban Confederate flags. And they just made this announcement. And, you know, that is, that seems like a last bastion, you know. Because folk ain't, you know, trying to go in there where the Confederate flag is waving. And, but a couple of days ago, it was a NASCAR official who knelt during the national anthem before one of the races at Atlanta Motor Speedway in Hampton, Georgia. So, you know, that could have been part of the breakthrough. But the announcement, Darrell Wallace Jr., the first black driver in 50 years to win one of the NASCAR's top three national touring series, called on NASCAR to ban the flags outright. And that's major for, you know, they're a money-driven thing. They're not there because they don't have anything to do. That is very much a tremendously large industry, making a ton of money. And so in what kind of statement do you see that that makes, that they're willing to stop flying that flag at that event?
I think that what we're seeing in this moment, Sharon, is I really think that we're seeing a shift in the narrative, a shift in the cultural zeitgeist of this moment. Mm-hmm. We are seeing in a variety of different ways, not only NASCAR refusing to continue to fly or allow for the flying of Confederate flags at NASCAR races, we're also seeing all over the country and all over the world images of white supremacy being taken down and being removed. And so we're seeing in this moment an entire discussion around sort of a reframing or reimagining of a world in which we are approaching and addressing white supremacist ideology and symbology and mythology in a way that is challenging the ways in which we have been thinking about these kinds of conversations for many, many years. And so what we see now is something that is presenting an opportunity for us to begin to come together and build coalition about how it is that we can create and imagine a world that is different than the world that has existed before this moment. And I think that we really should seize the opportunity that we have here to have these conversations, to have these discussions around understanding and really investigating and interrogating white supremacist ideology. And I think that a lot of the work that we're seeing and what is happening in this moment is happening in very large white spaces. We see in a group like NASCAR, which doesn't have a very long history of being particularly culturally inclusive, inclusive or culturally sensitive, but we see even in NASCAR a willingness to discuss and to have conversation around challenging these long-established symbols of white supremacist ideology and recontextualizing and changing that discussion. And I think that it's a really wonderful and remarkable moment that we're living in.
Okay, now let us enter into Tennessee, that they won't let none of it go.
Come on now. I mean, that's frustration, right?
Let us.
There's one step forward with NASCAR and dealing with and addressing the white supremacist symbol that is the rebel flag. And then on the other hand, right here in the great city of Nashville,
Lord help
at the Capitol building, their refusal to contextualize and appropriately recognize the history of the Nathan Bedford Forrest monument and bust, which is a representation in an acknowledgement and an honorarium of an individual who was responsible for the creation of a terrorist organization known as the Ku Klux Klan. And so we have a struggle that we are still dealing with right here in our city, and that is a reminder for us to understand just what is at stake in this moment and the fact that the struggle is still continuing.
And let me further say, not just that bust, But look around the Capitol, inside, outside, it's everywhere. So, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest, of course, is a terrible example, but there's other examples that are there, and that's all we get to see, and that image is projected out to all the tourists and everywhere people come to visit. And who's that on that statue? Oh, they hated the black folk and tried to kill them. And I mean, what, do you understand what I'm saying? When you got to bring a tour group and say, let me tell you, you know, everything you're going to see is going to be about hate. You won't see anything that represents the people of color that have helped to build this community. And that, to me, is a crying shame. We're going to take a time out. Yeah, don't start me. I told y'all. I told you, don't y'all start me, because it's shameful. It is shameful. Anyway, let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Well, good afternoon. It's very eventful out here this afternoon. It's been a crash over in Bordeaux, 3200 block of Clarksville Pike. In Madison, two cars involved there, 700 block of Maya Drive, with injuries in Midtown. The fire department's on the scene here, 1200 block of Horton Avenue, South Nashville. That wreck is still there at the intersection of Hamilton Church and Hamilton Crossings. This traffic report brought to you by Bars Music City Soul Food at barsmusiccitysoulfood.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Samora Penderhughes has a message.
I'm not trying to just sit at my piano and write music. I'm trying to say, how can I be most of use?
Next time on Jazz Night in America, the young composer, pianist, activist takes his transformation suite to his hometown of Berkeley, California. It's music, poetry, and a call to action. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Tune in on Thursdays to hear WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's WFSK Artist of the Week is saxophonist and producer Boney James. His latest release is entitled Solid. Don't miss the WFSK feature Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Timothy Hughes, Sharon Kay. X, you know, you really missed the inside the beltway in here.
Yeah. Yep.
I should have told you. I should have said, turn on your monitor so you can hear us in here. Tim, we having the show that the audience hears, and then we having the one that they don't hear.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Yes. Oh Lord. Anyway, we're so happy to have you listening to the 411 show as we are on the campus of historic Fisk University. And I feel blessed to be able to be on HBCU radio and to speak on issues of relevance to the community and not have to do mamby-pamby milk toasty.
Ask Tim, has the mayor made any comment about those statues? I mean,
oh, Tim,
you know, he could get in front of the cameras and say something.
Well, that's the point. Tim, X wanted to know.
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Had you heard anything at all about, has the mayor said anything about those markers and historical statues and plaque and different things of that nature? Has he made a public statement on that or not?
So it is my understanding that the mayor has made some comment about some of the markers, the historical markers that were damaged in some of the in the aftermath of one of the recent demonstrations and rallies. There were apparently individual provocateurs who were in the audience who had come to try to disturb the peace that otherwise was present at the rally. Mm-hmm. And so there was a particular marble historical marker that was damaged to commemorate the confrontation between Diane Nash and several of the student activists in 1960 who approached then-Mayor Ben West of Nashville, mm-hmm. and later was successful in desegregating the lunch counters in Nashville, Tennessee. But it is my understanding that there are other markers, mm-hmm. other historic commemorations here in the city of Nashville and throughout the state of Tennessee that have not been spoken to, mm-hmm. as it relates to their history and put into appropriate context, in my view. Mm-hmm. The governor and several others who are responsible for the state legislature walk every day past commemoration statues, monuments to forefathers and forebearers here, mm-hmm. in the state of Tennessee. And many of those forebearers and forefathers are the kinds of individuals, mm-hmm. who we would not talk about in polite company, based on the history that they really are responsible for rotting on the people of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so this is an important opportunity, Sharon, for us to really do some cultural and historical education for Tennesseans, yes. about how it is that our state was created and the ways in which it came to be. The fact that there were some people who were here before there was a state called Tennessee, mm-hmm. the indigenous people who were here on this land, who were in many ways submitted to genocide, and who were submitted to a certain mm-hmm. level of exploitation and dehumanization. And then there were constructions that were built by individuals who were stolen from other lands, mm-hmm. and brought to this land to work and create what we now see as the state capital and the legislature and many of these great titans and monuments to the history of our state. And so we need to put these conversations and these issues into an appropriate context. And it's important for my brothers and sisters who are listening in the audience, particularly those who identify as white or as European Americans, to understand that you have a role to play, mm-hmm. in the cultural education and historical education about understanding the history of our state. You also have a particularly important moment in this particular issue as it relates to how it is that we're going to move forward and how we're going to create a better and more welcoming society for future Nashvillians and future Tennesseans,
right.
because it is the conversations that need to happen between our white brothers and sisters with one another that are going to determine whether or not we're going to really be able to make some substantial headway,
yeah.
in how it is that we address some of these issues and concerns. The conversations that white folk need to have with other white folk as it relates to white privilege,
yes.
and the ways in which we are erasing and minimizing the contributions of other parts of our community in the creation and the sustainment of what it is that we see here in Tennessee is, yeah. a very important conversation to have.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, culturally speaking, we know that, and people that were born and raised here generations know that there were slave markets here and there were slaves here. They know about Jim Crow. They know about what happened to their families and their friends and how things have changed over time. But there's a lot of people that are in this area now that don't know and don't understand the struggle and don't understand how much blood, sweat, and tears it took to even allow a black person to be in downtown Nashville, and the people who went through what they went through, in the form of Miss Nash and the other students, back in the day. It was the students and the young people who pushed the envelope, and they always have. So that's what we expect them to continue to do.
And, you know, even I know Tim
absolutely,
can't hear me.
Absolutely.
But
in many ways, we have a tradition here in Nashville of seeing student-led and youth-led movements that create and inspire worldwide movements. I mean, it was Dr. King who came to Nashville to get inspired to be able to become the international world leader in human rights and civil rights that he later became. He was inspired by what he saw that was happening with the Nashville student movement, that desegregated lunch counters and created opportunities in their generation. And so here we are once again with Nashville being in a position to lead the conversation as it relates to how it is that we can peacefully protest but demand policy and create change in a way that is really, really substantive. And I think we have a really great opportunity to do just that.
Well, and also, additionally, the point is that this would help mainstream of Nashville. When they are sitting there soaking in all them statues and all that negative energy all the time, they are constantly going to get these images of us being ignorant and stupid and should be treated with hate and disdain. They will not see any strong images or anybody they can look up to in the form of those statues and those placards in the Capitol and around Nashville. We don't have it.
Yes.
That makes no sense to me why we don't have it. So I'm saying that at the end of the day, the beauty and the blessing may come when they can look around white Nashville, can look around and see things that African American faces and images, and they're not hidden up on the second floor back by the broom closet. And it's not down in the basement in the dusty box that is in their face.
That's right.
So they can have a different perspective and image of us and begin to have some respect for what we have gone through. And I know many of you out there that have gone through so much, your family members and friends have. I mean, this has been a tremendous thing to see people still endure after all this time. Now, X, I know you had a question. Tim, I think you'll be able to hear him.
Hopefully you can hear me, Tim. You know, to me, the inability for those in leadership, whether it be the governor, legislatures, the mayor, to not be proactive and get ahead of the curve and not have to wait for someone to protest. You see what's going on around the country. You understand the plight of the American people, why this is taking place. It just seems to me that no one should have to say. You should, if you call yourself a God-fearing person or you call yourself a decent person and you hold offices, you understand some of the history behind some of these statues, some of these laws. And so no one should have to ask the mayor how he feels. He should be doing this proactively. No one should ask the governor what his thoughts are about removing some of these symbols from around our state. He should be moving proactively or coming out and speaking to these issues rather than hiding or waiting for someone to come and say something to him. I mean, it speaks volumes about people's character.
Tim, I hope we didn't lose him.
I don't think so. He's probably doing something. But I said that to say that the individuals who hold leadership in our state, they know better. It's not that they don't know.
It's the
courage.
But it's the wishy-washy.
Yeah, just come out. At least come out and say, you know.
But X, that's not politically correct.
Mm-hmm, there it is.
The thought is on.
It's easy to come in front of the cameras and say, well, you know, I thought about having the RNC convention here. It's easy to say that, but you have nothing to say about anything else.
No. Because
that's what I'm talking about.
Because that was about money and hanging with the party.
Yeah, think about how this state could move forward if we did the right thing all over the state. And the tourism and the dollars that were pouring to this state because this state has moved forward into the next century.
Well, and hopefully the young ones will stay encouraged and won't get tired. Because this ain't no short thing, you know.
Sure enough.
Yeah, it is not. I mean, we're talking about 401 years, and we are still on the battlefield. But
my goodness.
But isn't that something? But the strategies are different, calling for different things at different times. And since you're one, Timothy Hughes, that is on the, you know, granular brother, on the ground, boots on the ground and you know, flip-flops, you there, okay? I just want to say that, are you feeling some level of optimism or something that can keep you encouraged? Because, you know, this is a struggle, brother. It's a battle, and I know you well know it.
It is absolutely a battle, Sharon. And I really appreciate the caller articulating and expressing their feelings about the fact that it does take a tremendous amount of courage. You know, I'm reminded that there was a book entitled Profiles in Courage that I believe was written by a previous president, John F. Kennedy. And apparently, when asked why Profiles in Courage was written, John Kennedy responded that, well, there's a reason why that book is so short.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's so few examples of people who are really willing to step up and speak out when they have to speak truth to power. And so I try to hold myself accountable, and we in the movement space and the organizing space, we want to hold ourselves and our leaders accountable in this particular moment. But you're right. It is very, very challenging work. This is a very difficult and strenuous responsibility that we are taking onto ourselves. But we are not doing it alone. Mm-hmm. We are doing this because we're standing on the shoulders of giants who came before us, like there at Fisk University, W.E.B. Du Bois and Diane Nash and Donald Franklin and so many of
John Lewis,
those who were on the battlefield fighting, who laid a legacy and have allowed us to pick up the torch. And so we count it an honor and a privilege to be able to serve in this space. But we need our compatriots, those of us who care about these issues, those who are motivated by and desire to have a voice in this process and to take up support in this struggle. We need you to come together with us. We need you to come from every village and hamlet to come together here in the city of Nashville to support the efforts and make sure that you are participating in the ways in which you can make your voice heard in this process. And so to those who are concerned about police oversight, we encourage you definitely to continue to follow and to support the efforts and work of the Metro Nashville Community Oversight Board, to take a look at and investigate and interrogate very thoroughly how it is that our leaders, our city council people, and elected officials on the state level are responsible for disseminating the resources and adjudicating their responsibilities as elected officials. So those who have the ability, we encourage you to make sure that you are registered and you are participating in the voting process, and that you avail yourself of the opportunity to vote by mail if you prefer to do so. And that we encourage you certainly to make sure that these dollars that are coming from the federal government and that will be disseminated as a part of the 2020 census, you make yourself available to the possibility and the ability to make sure that you fill out your census form as soon as possible, because we need you all who are listening to the sound of my voice to be a part of this struggle as well.
And, you know, may I just add to that, please get check your history. You do that, your eyes, the scales will come off of your eyes. You'll be like, oh Lord, yes. Look at the American history, and then you will awaken from this Rip Van Winkleness I mean, just you say, oh wow, because we don't want them, Tim, to get weary. Because they like it quick, give it to me quick, tick tock, bloom, bling, blah, got that. I mean, you know, this ain't one of them kind of things.
That's not one of those things.
No.
Absolutely. And so I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to speak with those who are in the listening audience. We appreciate the opportunity to have your ear in this moment. We know that right now there are so many things that are competing for your attention, and so we appreciate you spending time with us today and getting some good information from Sharon Kay and Russell 411. It's so wonderful to have the opportunity to be here with you today.
I love you. And you know, I'm always tickled to death to have you, because I also know, also in addition to that, you are a tremendous vocalist, as well as a Fisk alum. So, you know, I know you ever on the altar,
Hello. Thank you, sir. You know, I appreciate you were talking about history, and of course, I'm always reminded. I would be remiss if I got off the air today on the historic campus of Fisk University and didn't mention the fact that I'm so grateful to be a part of the legacy of the Fisk University Jubilee Singers.
Amen.
And to remind those who are in the listening audience, I'm sure they probably are already aware that the moniker of the Music City is such because of the legacy of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And so I'm so grateful to be an inheritor of that legacy.
Yes.
I'm grateful to have an opportunity to serve in the capacity in which I do here in the city of Nashville, to be a distinguished alumnus of Fisk University, but also really grateful to be a servant of the people here in the city of Nashville. It is truly a special and a unique city.
Absolutely.
And we have a wonderful opportunity to bring about tremendous change. So
absolutely.
I hope that we will see this opportunity in this moment.
I do too. And Tim, I will be back in touch because, you know, once I have your number, it's you know, I'm gonna use it, okay?
Absolutely, please do, and I will be honored to come on
and share and
talk about what we're working on
and what we're doing here
in the great city of Nashville. Thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
The opportunity to be here.
Of course, and you have a good rest of the evening, and we'll be in touch soon. That was Timothy Hughes.
Absolutely.
And we're grateful for his energy and his activism in the city of Nashville. Probably sometime tomorrow I'm going to have these 2 hours up on my podcast. I'm trying to catch up, y'all. I'm trying, Lord. So, you know, I'm going to have these two up, and I know I got a bunch I got to put up. I know I do. But, you know, I'm an operation single, so I'm doing it as quick as I can. Anyway, that's all we have for you in Nashville. A-L-L is how I spell it. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.